What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Okay, we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Jim Lawler on the board. I think we've been live for a little bit. Evidently, our mic was open. Good thing we didn't say anything bad. Just saying. S&P.
Okay. Hold on, Tom. Go ahead.
S&P futures up 16. NASDAQ futures up 65. So no matter what, the market just keeps grinding along here, even with all the Epstein stuff, which is, you know, becoming kind of a distraction, and I think it's actually gotten beyond the president at this point. I mean, it's really, he thinks it's all about him, but I really don't think it is. It's well, we'll talk more about it when Mr. Flanagan's on later, but it's just, I think it's a, you almost sense that there's a, for the first time in the world, both sides, which agree on nothing, seem to agree that this kind of stuff shouldn't be happening. And yet it is, and we talk a lot of what we talk about on the show. You know, of course, it seems like we're all over the damn place, but really we're not, because this is all kind of the same. It's all the same subject. An awful lot of people in this country, left or right, are absolutely perplexed by what is going on with the criminal justice system. Really, in the last 40 years, and it's how some people manage to do a whole bunch of stuff and don't get caught and nobody cares or don't care or people are intimidated by it. And if you have a any kind of a small business in virtually any sort of a regulated industry, I mean, you have to know how uneven it is. I mean, and you look at some of the courts versus other courts, and some people are paying, you know, $1,100 an hour for an attorney, and regular people can't pay that. I mean, it turns out what I'm stunned by this whole thing, and, you know, and President Trump is President Trump. I mean, he's going to make seemingly every situation worse or whatever, and the world always flows through him. Well, okay, some of this may land on him, but it's, I don't think any of it's prosecutable or anything like that. But I was reading an article last night, and it turns out this guy, Jeffrey Epstein, you know, I was stunned, if you guys were listening last week, or ladies, I was stunned last week when the guy had not only the place, he's got an island, right, which he paid, I thought I read somewhere, $21 million, and also he's got a place right near Mar-a-Lago, which isn't, that doesn't mean anything other than he was in that same area of Florida, this big place in Manhattan. Now it turns out he had a place in New Mexico and a big place in Ohio. How do you not follow the money? I'm also getting tweets from Kevin saying how wonderful job they've done in this whole mess or something for more than 4 years. But the idea, none of this money, I'm just saying follow the money. I mean, in the same way you would follow the money for us or for somebody on this, or for one of the listeners to the show. And this is not... This could have been done during the Biden administration. It could have been done in Trump's first term. Probably could have been done near the end of the Obama administration, because it started in, what, 96 when the guy first got put somewhere. I mean, this is a long time coming. And I think the people on the right, the MAGA people, and the people on the left, for the first time in life, maybe might be agreeing on something. How the hell does this guy get... How does this guy get preferential treatment on a case in Florida? Then he gets a jail sentence where he gets to leave and have babes over to his place during the day. I don't know what, the whole situation, and people are sitting there going, how does anybody else get that? And we all know that right, that Rank has its privilege to a certain extent. I think when it gets to this extent, I think people are kind of tired of it, and I think they're tired of it on both sides. What do you think, Jimmy? It's not, we know when it comes to women, we know Trump has always been a sleazebag. So is Clinton. And it doesn't surprise me that their names are bandied about with this guy. That doesn't mean they were ever messing around with a 14-year-old. It doesn't mean they have anything they could be convicted for. It just means they were hanging around with the wrong guy, which, you're supposed to not do. But the fact is, that's not a convicted offense. So I don't necessarily think that, I don't think there is a picture or any. I don't think Trump was hanging around with any 14-year-olds. He liked young ladies, but I'm gonna stay right now. I bet they're all over 18. I mean, I don't think he.
I don't know, Chief. I'll sound in on that. I think that he likes to be. We know that the president likes to be around pretty women.
Well, he's not alone there.
No, he isn't. But we know that. I mean, when you look at it, it was a dinner time discussion. You had two con artists. Epstein conned his way into Wall Street. Trump, pretty much people are starting to figure this out.
But how do you con your way to five mansions? Five mansions, one on a $21 million island. How do you do that?
Very well. I mean, Madoff conned his way into, a couple of billion dollars that he ended up
lossing? That was different. He promised people the world, and people gobbled enough to say, okay. But it had nothing to do with it. But this is, the one senator I was listening to, and he's Democratic, so he could, this could have happened when Biden won his office. I mean, I think what people maybe need to at least consider, I'm not going to understand because I say it, is you can be as right or as left as you want to be, and with all your hates for the other side, which I wish people wouldn't do, with all these hates for the other side, you have to look at this realistically and say, nobody in Congress is willing to blow the whistle on somebody else, be it the other side or their side, for fear it comes back to them.
I agree with you.
I mean, but this is, Jimmy, this is human nature. I think, I said my dad died young, or he tells me he's the most honest man that ever walked. I mean, I barely knew the guy. But I will bet you that even if he was, which I'm going to believe everybody and hope he was, I'm going to say he probably knew five cops that had no business being on the police force and didn't turn them in. I'm not saying every senator is a crook, but I don't understand. Maybe it's because it's when we were on the board, when on the floor to CBOE and our training was open outcry. The idea that you let people cheat. Now, there's always going to be somebody who wants to cheat, right? But if you let people cheat, everybody thought it would impact the business and their livelihood. So there was pressure there to not let anybody cheat. We didn't really need regulators. Except if you really caught somebody cheating, you needed somebody to prosecute them, you couldn't do it yourself. But there was a thing there that if there were five people out of the 975 badges or 85 badges that we had that all of a sudden got convicted of cheating, everybody had this feeling that it would reflect back on them horribly. Yet somehow or another, the police, the Senate, the House, the State Senate, the State House, they don't seem to have the same attitude for whatever reason. They don't have that urgency to say, hey, there's two guys that are taking all this money from these people. If they ever get caught, it's gonna blow back on all of us. They don't seem to have the same urgency or the same thought process. And I don't know why. Maybe because they don't think it's going to affect their livelihood as much as we did. I don't know if it's the money. I don't know what it is. But we thought, most people thought, hey, if this place goes down, where do I find money for my next beer? I don't know if it's the money pressure or what it is. But it doesn't seem like these people seem to care as much. Or they care, or they keep their mouth shut or whatever. But there's not There's not the thing to clean the place out. I mean, look at what's going on with the city. How many, in the last, I won't say a few weeks because there's been a couple, how many suits did they end up settling for this John Birch guy and a couple other people that you know, tortured people into confessing things they didn't do? You can't tell me that no other policeman knew about that. But I'm just saying, but I've never in my lifetime seen anything as big as when I was reading this article yesterday about, you know, two more places in Ohio and New Mexico. I'm sitting there going, God, how many more are there? I mean, how do you hide something like that, for God's sake? Just saying.
I really don't know. But he obviously was good enough to get into, you know, con his way in and get people or get money. I mean, the rumor had it that by the time Lehman Brothers figured out that he conned his way in, they just paid him off to go away. How much? I don't know.
But he didn't make $150 million, which he would need for all these places. We're talking 25 years ago when $150 million is like a lot of dough. Maybe they did. It just seems like they probably wouldn't. But, you know, I'm saying that's why I'm looking. I think for the first time I've seen people that then there's people that say that they don't care about it. What's the difference? But I think some people are like, this has gone on way too long. You know, and we have. I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that if there were women around, that Clinton and Trump were near them. That doesn't mean they should be convicted of anything unless they actually were someplace. I mean, the guy was talking about one of the guys that used to run Trump's casino said that one night Trump showed up with these girls that were under 21, and they said, "Well, how'd you know one was under 21?" And the guy says, "Well, she was a tennis star, I think." Well, she's 19. I mean, you know, you and I mean, I would have an issue with somebody 40 years old hanging around with a 19-year-old. I would never do that, but there's nothing illegal there. She's an adult, and she's obviously on the tennis circuit. I mean, she's supposed to have some moxie. You know, it's not what I would choose, but it's also not a crime. Now, should she have been in the casino? Probably not. You're supposed to be 21. But that doesn't mean she can't be out with the guy. I mean, there's no law break there that I can see. It's not something I would do or something I would appreciate in anybody that I hung around with, but it's not illegal, is it?
No.
I mean, the stuff Clinton, I mean, he had Eleanor Mondale was the daughter of Walter Mondale, who ran for president, right? Wasn't he? He was somebody's VP, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, he was Carter's VP. Hmm. Well, his daughter, as the judge said in Caddyshack, and she's passed by now, I mean, which is unfortunate, which she had a certain zest for living. She was married to Chicago Bear tackle Keith Van Horn. But let's just say that didn't stop her. And evidently one day, you know, she's in the White House, and she and Bill are doing the deed on one of the pool tables, which makes me think if I ever get invited to the White House, which I won't, I like to shoot pool. I'd be a little leery about that, but just saying. Well, evidently, Monica was at the gate, and they weren't letting her in. This is from some Secret Service guy's book he wrote. And Hillary was looking all over for him. And he's in the pool room with well, you know, Eleanor Mondale was 35. Monica was over 21. Hillary knew what she was getting into or what she had. It's not something I would necessarily condone, but it's, you don't put anybody in jail for that. I mean, that's what all this stuff gets so, it goes between morality to law to something, back and forth to just sleaziness. And I think Epstein took it to a new level. I don't think there's any question that somebody was trying to either compromise people or something, because once you start talking about girls that are younger, now you got a crime. You know, what was the motivation to all that? Was it two governments trying to compromise people? Who's the people that have the documents on everybody? Is there another J. Edgar Hoover there? We just don't know who he is. I mean, I just, your mind just keeps wandering on this, or at least mine does. Just saying.
It's possible.
But why? What does it do for Epstein, who's now dead? What does it do for him to compromise three people from the Middle East that have videos of them? Drinking, which they're not supposed to do over there in some places. You know, doing shrimp cocktails, and maybe, I don't know if you're supposed to eat that. And, oh, by the way, you know, doing 14-year-olds. I mean, he's not powerful enough to benefit from that down the road. Who is? You know, who does he give, sell, slash, get paid for that stuff? I mean, the questions, and even, you know, and I'm saying, I don't care who you are, the biggest progressive, the biggest MAGA, I think you're starting to have the same questions. How does this happen? Who's behind it? And why can't our law enforcement deal with it when they seem to be able to harass everybody else? Is that an interesting summation or no?
Agreed, it is.
Yeah, I don't. Anyway, what about baseball? What about baseball? How do the Cubs win every game and still can't shake the Brewers?
I don't know. The Brewers are hot right now.
Right now we've got the Phillies and Mets, who are Monday morning standing thing. This is the National League East. They're virtually together. Phillies 56-43, the Mets 56-44. So they've played one more game and lost it. They're both 4-6 in the last 10 games, so no harm, no foul there. In the Central, the Cubs and the Brewers are absolutely tied, 59-40, with the best records in the National League. The last 10 games, the Cubs are 6-4. The Brewers are 10-0. And the Reds are 6-4, and all they did was get them even further behind, right? Well, not really. I guess they hung even with the Cubs. Pirates, 1-9, got swept by the Sox. Ouch. The Dodgers, 58-42. Padres, fairly close, 54-45. And the Giants are 52-48, still kind of within striking distance. Over in the American League, I watched the game last night. Was pretty good. It was the, I'm watching some of these games. I'm going brain dead. Detroit played somebody. Detroit won. Detroit's got a great. Blue Jays are way ahead of the Yankees. They're 58-41. Yankees 55-44, and right behind them are the Red Sox 54-47. Red Sox being 8-2. Get a load of this. Blue Jays 7-3. Yankees 7-3. Red Sox 8-2 in their last 10 games. So talk about playing good ball and not getting anywhere. The Tigers, they had a 6-game losing streak. I thought those guys were way too. They still have the best record in baseball, 60-40. Guardians are under 500. They're 11 out. That American League Central looks like a fait accompli. We're in American League West. The Astros are a little ahead. They're 57-42, even though they were 3-7 in their last 10 games. The Mariners 53-46. Rangers 50-50. I would not count the Rangers out.
No, I wouldn't.
Especially of a wild card. And what is your boy? All the purists, all the people who love being armchair general managers, are all pissed off at the extra wild card team because it doesn't cause people to be sellers early enough because all they want to do is make deals. So you're not if you have a team, you know this. Let's put it this way: I was involved in this. When I say involved. I shared season tickets with another guy, so I had, 41 games for the Cubs. And but we had four seats, so, you know, it was a pretty big investment. Nothing pissed you off more than the team starting to look pretty good in, like, June and July, even if they had a crummy start. And you're thinking, you know, if they keep this up, they might be a wild card team, and who knows. And all of a sudden, they get rid of five players. Now your tickets are worthless. You don't want to go. It's you know, you don't want to go because you're pissed off, but... Oh, but then last year, the Tigers, everybody thought they were a seller, and why were they a seller? And everybody was all pissed off at them, and then they played better after they got rid of the guys, right? And had an absolutely great record after they allegedly sold people. So it doesn't always work out that way. I mean, you can end up have a good trade. You can have a guy that everybody else wants, and you might have somebody just as good. You sell him, get somebody else, and you're off to the races, right?
That is true. You could do the old George Steinbrenner, buy the best team on paper. Doesn't mean that you are going to win a World Series.
Well, sometimes it's every year. A long time ago, I read some excerpts from Al Kaline. Al Kaline's book, and he's every year, seemingly, now this is more in modern baseball. When I say modern, And the Yankees had such a good team year after year with Gehrig and Roof and those guys. But he says every year is a totally different attitude, totally different group of people. Unless you can string together, like Atlanta did, the four pitchers who really kind of ran the show. And every time somebody came up in the minors, one of them, it wasn't Maddox. Who was the captain? I think he's the guy on TV now. Calls his name. But he would take the new guy out to dinner and say, this is the way we operate here, and that's the way it is. So Bobby Cox had his own, essentially, lieutenants. So, yeah, he was a good manager, but he also managed...
You mean Smoltz?
Smoltz is the guy on TV now? Yeah, they might have been him, yeah. Was he the team captain? I think he was.
Yes.
And you take people out and say, this is the way we behave here. You know, and I think the Cubs have a... This team here has some fairly rare camaraderie, I think. And, I think they're playing maybe a little better than they are because of it. Al Kaline said that one year, they all got together before the season, went out, and the managers and coaches said, look, for one year, why don't we not worry about our own personal stats and actually worry about winning ball games? I don't know if they won the World Series, but they definitely won the pennant. He said next year, it all degenerated again into individual statistics. So you never really know the year that you're sort of in. But it's like anything else. I mean, I've been in softball teams that overachieved, and I've been in teams that underachieved. And, it just happens. It becomes people being comfortable in positions they're in. Everybody gets better with the people next to them. You're happy with the guys sitting in front of you and behind you in the lineup. Sometimes you just get a little bit of a magic. And now if you're really, really good and you got four pitchers that can, or five, that can mow people down, doesn't mean that you overachieve. You're always going to be good. The perfect example is before everybody's time here, when the Phillies had the really good Vade Schmidt, and they had Pete Rose, I think, at one point.
Yes.
And all of a sudden they put Dale Screen in charge, and he basically was big enough and rough enough to ruffle those guys' feathers, and all of a sudden they had a great year. And he was perfect for an older, mature type of team that he could... jump all over. I don't think Dallas Green would ever have been a good manager for a rookie team, but what do you say? We have index futures. Excuse me. The S&Ps are up 15. The S&P is up 61. We seem to go up every day. I don't know what we're pouring money in or what we're doing. We're going to have to talk about the Fed fight here as well, but we'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Jim Lawler in studio, Matt Byrne on the board, and we should have Mr. John Flanagan. So what did Louis describe himself as? Just a poor, corrupt public official?
Something like that, yeah.
Oh. Wasn't that, you finally watched the movie, eh, Matt?
Oh, yeah. I've actually seen it a couple times now.
It's one you can watch. Next time you watch it, be very mindful of all the different black and white shots and all the different shadows and stuff and how they were all set up.
Oh, yeah. No, it's got that noir look to it.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's really something. S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 65, Dow futures up 93. Again, the market has a total resilience. It's going up every single day, just about. And, we'll see where the sky's the limit. I mean, I don't want to go into it again today, but some of these stocks on paper are way more expensive than they were in 2000. All I'm saying, doesn't mean they won't get a lot more expensive. You know, we could just be starting here rather than whatever, you don't know, but it's enough to be a little concerned about if you're a valuation person. If you're not, don't worry about it. Over in Europe, DAX down 26 as we get this trade uncertainty going on over here with they're pushing back on Trump and they're not taking the deal, and who knows where that's going to all end. FTSE down 8 points, call that flat. CAC around on 27.3, so down just a little bit. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 82, 0.2%, almost flat. Hang Seng up 168.7%, Shanghai up 25.7%. Yen strengthens after ruling party loses upper house majority. Maybe Mr. Flanagan can comment on that. I don't know what the connection is there. I admit to being ignorant on that one. 10-year down 5 basis points, 4.38. Still can't get those guys over 4.5 or the 30-year over 5 consistently. We'll see how that all pans out because, Trump's fight with Powell, that's kind of the real thing. If you lower short-term rates too much, does it mean people think there's going to be more inflation? Does that take the long-term rates up? It's a pretty complicated situation. Oil down 4 cents, 67.30. Brent down 18 cents, 69.10. Natural gas down 18 cents, 3.37. RBOB down a penny, 2.14. Gold up 20 bucks, 33.76. Silver up 37 cents, 38.83. Copper up 2 cents, 5.63. So copper has not come down at all from the 60-cent move with the tariffs. It went up 60 cents. It's been down a little bit from there, but now it's back up almost to its high. Platinum, which is on, I think it is on an all-time high, up 17 bucks, 14.73. We have FX. We're still at 116.6 against the euro, which is kind of where we were, under the 117. A British pound under, just slightly under 135, which we have been for a while, 134.7. And we've got Bitcoin 121 at 118.555. That's a lot of mouthful there, Matt. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? Cubs lose.
Not doing too good, the Cubs. Yeah, but good morning, everyone. It's currently 6:35 a.m. on July 21st, 2025. Let's look at traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Vernon Interchange at 35 minutes. Outbound at 28. Meanwhile, inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB at 34 minutes. Outbound at 32. Weather for Chicago, 68 degrees at O'Hare and 71 at Midway. High of around 82 today. Haze now with clear skies later. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 69. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 86 degrees right now. Some sunshine with a thunderstorm in the afternoon. Temperatures set to reach 103 degrees. Let's look at sports real quick. MLB yesterday, White Sox away against the Pirates. Sox won 7-2. Cubs at home with the Red Sox. Cubs lost 6-1. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Mr. Flanagan, are you out getting your Sox season tickets?
Oh, please.
3 in a row. They're way better than last year.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you set the bar low enough, you find lots of reasons to rejoice about stuff. So.
They got some good players.
Oh, yeah. I'd actually be going to a game tonight, so imagine.
Skybox, I assume?
Yeah, yeah.
Who didn't show up where they invited you? Just saying. You know.
It's a wedding anniversary celebration.
Well, you'll have a good time.
Special occasion wherever it would be held. Tom. It just happens to be at Guaranteed Great Fields.
Well, good for you. I mean, they have good food there, and now be careful. There's no cash.
Right.
So if you're driving, you better bring 30 clams to park.
Yep.
I mean, bring your credit card for 30 clams to park.
Scary. That's standard today. No surprises there.
Yeah, it's people wonder why the inflation. I was actually at dinner at my bro's yesterday, which I do on a lot of Sundays, and I was talking about the Cubs in one group, and boy, the other people, all they were talking about was how somehow in the last week, everything they bought seemed higher than 2 weeks before. That there was just a push up with just about everything.
Oh, yeah.
Pork, chicken, you name it. Somebody else got their car fixed, and they're like, what the hell was that? You know? Yeah, I mean, it's creeping, and, you know, we'll see. I really hope that the, you know, Trump doesn't buffalo the Fed in doing something crazy with these rates, because, you know, if they start pouring more money in, which they already are, by the way, but if they start doing even more, you're not going to be able to contain the news on the inflation, even if you keep the CPI down. But, I mean, what if CPI is 0.4, 0.5 next month? I mean, it's starting to move. It's funny, we have even people on the show that think I'm way too negative on these tariffs hitting inflation. And, you know, they're trying to do whatever excuse they can for the tariffs to not be inflationary. Well, you can do that all you want, but the only thing that I will say is, for whatever reason, John and Jimmy, and I don't know why, that the CPI, for as long as I've been looking at it, we're talking since 1978, it seems to have a 3 or 4 to 5 month lag. And I, for the life of me, I can't figure out why. You would think somebody goes out and looks at the price of rice and the price of oats and whatever else, sends it in, and it should be current, maybe a one-month lag, but it just isn't. If the tariffs are going to cause prices to go up, which I think they're going to have to, I mean, how can they not? They're not going to go up as much as, you know, maybe some people predicted, but you're probably not going to see it. Where are we, July? I think you see them in the September numbers. September, October, and I don't know why, but it works both ways. When inflation is coming back down, it seems to percolate through the system even after everything you observe, it's already stopped. They must use current numbers, current month numbers. But do you feel the same way on this or what?
Yeah, it takes a while for this stuff to percolate, as you say. But I think there's a lot of interest in bashing the tariffs for whatever reason, you come up with at the moment. And of course, with all the, yelling and screaming about inflation for the last 4 years, it was an easy method of attack to say that the tariffs would increase inflation. And, there may be, a rise in certain corners. I can't predict overall it's going to be, a big spur to the inflation rate, but it was an easy way to kind of like get static out there. Here's another reason not to do this, but I think it's going to be hard to pin that on the numbers as they come out. In fact, I don't think it's going to show what people would like.
Why is the tariff calculation is so easy? Why do people, mostly on the right, who are Trumpers, I'm not accusing you of whatever, but why do people feel like this needs to be defended, and we'll wait and see, and we'll do that? It's right in front of your face what's going to happen. I mean, I absolutely agree that if the price of Nike shoes is $200 in the store, the tariff is not $20. The tariff is, if it comes from China or someplace, at $20, and the tariff's 10%, the tariff's $2. I mean, I know that, yet people on the show are constantly arguing with me about there's going to be no effect. Other stuff, there's a pretty serious effect. You know, if you have a 30% tax on tomatoes, and tomatoes come in at $1 a pound, and you make them $1.30, they're going to go up 30 cents here. Every single one of these things is its own world, every single item. But someplace, somewhere, if the tariffs at the end of the month are $40 million or $40 billion, somebody paid them. And if you added a sales tax, which the entire country would be aghast at, if you did that, somehow or another, the CPI doesn't count the sales tax. But they are going to count the tariff. So just in terms of calculations, the tariffs are going to be included where sales tax wouldn't be, even though it gets you to the same place. Why do people continually say, when Trump's people have said, it's going to be $600 billion. Why is it everybody else's job to say, oh, man, it's not right? It's really going to be like nothing. Well, it's not going to be 600.
I don't think you can calculate accurately, you know, what tariffs do as far as consumption goes. And again, it's an attempt to change consumption patterns to encourage or discourage, you know, the purchase.
How do you know what it is?
Well, until you know exactly what products people are steering away from because the tariffs inflate the price for them and are not, you know, they have no problem with seeking alternatives to it. I don't know
What if there aren't any?
Well, but assume there are some. You can't assume there are none, can you?
Well, you can't assume there are tomorrow anywhere.
It depends on the product. You got to take that into consideration, though, as far as prices overall. I'm just saying, I can't say, you know, in any kind of exact number what difference it makes, but it surely doesn't make the kind of difference that people are just going to continue to buy the highest priced goods because they're so wedded to them, and they're not going to explore alternatives.
Yeah, but what,
if they are buying less expensive goods, then how is that increasing inflation?
I'm trying my best to agree with you here. If you put up 20 products, the four of us, you and me and Jimmy and Matt, we would probably go through in somewhat of an educated manner all 20 of the products. Some, if you didn't buy them from somebody else, you could care less. Okay, but fact is, we are buying them from somebody else, so they must be either better or cheaper or something. There will be minimal problems on some of them. Other stuff, maybe there isn't any sort of a... But let's take Liechtenstein, for instance. They make false teeth. I don't know, does anybody here make false teeth? Well, what if they don't? Well, then it's right on top. Okay, then it's added right to it. You know, maybe the guy in this end will ease a little bit, but if there's no competitor... I'm saying, if we take all 20 of the items, we're going to come to a different conclusion on all 20. And you're absolutely correct. Every one of them is going to be different. And guess what? There's a million products. Okay, so... If we went past 20, we got a long road ahead of us, don't we? We're trying to go one by one. But I'm saying the administration's estimate is $600 billion over the course of a year. Why does everybody on the right have to say, oh, man, it's not going to be that. It's going to be like maybe nothing. Well, no, it's not going to be nothing. I'm with you on the part that it's not going to be 600. I think their estimate's way high because of just what you said. People are going to be able to substitute and other stuff and people on the other side of the pond are going to lower their prices. But even say it's 400, it's not nothing. It's the single biggest tax increase in the history this country's ever had.
It's been very convenient to kind of pitch it as, you know, it's a revenue-generating, you know, method, which I don't buy. And so the consumption patterns won't be changed by the tariffs, and people will pay these tariffs to the amount of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, which I don't buy at all. But the fact that it will,
so change. you're at that it's going to be in 6 months the tariff revenue is going to be zero. That's where you're at.
Well, I'm not saying zero, but it's not going to be as promised. I don't think that's reasonable. I don't think it's realistic. But that doesn't mean there won't be benefits when consumption.
What are the benefits?
Respond.
Well, I mean, the when you do this, you do it for two things. First of all, it's a massive tax. Okay, the minute that it is a massive tax.
I mean, but it's a voluntary tax.
Huh? What do you mean a voluntary tax?
Well, if you choose to buy that product, you're perfectly willing to assume the extra cost. That's not really like a tax.
Every one of these products does not have. The other part is, we want to put everybody around the rest of the world into a recession. But somehow that benefits us, does it? Did it work that way with the Smoot-Hawley tariffs? Why do people think that putting other places in a recession helps us? That's an economic argument that is so flawed, I can't even go there.
I don't get your point, really.
I'm saying we're doing this to screw other companies, other countries. What if it doesn't hurt us at all, which I don't think is true? What if that Britain goes into a recession because all of a sudden their exports does drop?
That's what's called leverage, Tom.
Leverage to what? Why are they an enemy?
Well, economically, there's a lot of allies of ours who are economic enemies. Take
Why?
Japan, for example.
Why are they an enemy?
Because their whole industries have been, you know, pitched in a way to pretty much destroy any American industry that they're capable of destroying, while at the same time smiling at everybody, you know, various meetings and heads of state. It's an old story, Tom.
What's the tariffs for American cars in Japan?
What American car?
Okay, but it's zero. We just don't make cars anybody wants over there.
Well, they don't do it by tariffs. They don't give you any rights. It's the same thing with the Chinese.
No, nobody wants my pickup truck in Tokyo. You can't even drive down the street with the damn thing.
If we could build other cars besides your truck and pitch them to the Japanese, and they were, you know, within the price range, Japanese would be.
I'm saying there's no tariffs on cars. So why are they
screwing us? Is the policy beyond that, Tom? It's a totally closed industry to American cars. It has been forever. It doesn't have to be just tariffs to do it.
Whatever. What do you think?
The Chinese will let us, you know, put our...
The Chinese are a different story.
But it's the same racket, though. They don't have to do it by tariffs. They just have to stipulate, well, you can sell your goods here, but if you want to produce them here, you're going to have to let the Chinese Communist Party take a controlling interest in the corporation we will set up for you. Well, you know, that I wouldn't call that an incentive.
So you're in the camp that if we put all these people into recession, it's good for us.
Well, that's the price maybe they have to pay.
They have to pay.
Unfair practices. They've been riding along for too long.
I don't see how anybody believes any of this stuff going around. I mean, we have a president who thinks that if somebody comes up with a new product somewhere, like cocoa, for instance, not new, but that if we buy it from somebody, somehow they're screwing us. Why? We want it. They have it. We send dollars over there, and then they're going to use the dollars to buy something that eventually gets back to here, right? Isn't that the way it's supposed to work?
That's just the way it's supposed to work. But
so we don't want to do that anymore.
Well, let's talk about something else, okay?
Yeah, I mean, but I just... The whole thing economically sort of makes no sense to me, especially if you change it every day. Well, we can always talk about Epstein.
Let me just say that if you're saying we cause recessions in other countries because we're... You know, cracking down on their former practices, then we've been subsidizing their prosperity.
I didn't say we're cracking down on
their former practices, Tom. So, can we have a balancing out here? Why does it have to always go in one direction?
I'm not so sure that it's as bad as they think. And I think with some countries, I'd be all over China, to be honest with you.
Maybe. Well, not just China.
Well, but they're the ones that use the child labor and don't seem to care who they pollute, even if it's themselves. I think Carl's absolutely right about. If things aren't balanced, tariffs are definitely a way. But I might say, if that's the way they are, maybe we just don't want anything from China. Or maybe, what about the companies that make stuff over there that are huge citizens here? We can't wait for NVIDIA to sell stuff over there, right? No.
No.
I mean, they used to say at the CBOE, you got water on both shoulders. I mean, we love China as a customer, right?
Well, if you could call them a customer, it means shipping our jobs overseas.
If you're talking
about profits too, so
I think they buy a boatload of Coca-Cola. They used to buy a boatload of soybeans. They buy a lot of stuff. I mean, for a long time, there was more pictures of the Colonel of KFC than it was for Mao. But it's not like you don't buy anything. Anyway.
Well, they buy it on their terms.
Well, okay. I mean, how high up do you think, other than what I was, I don't know if you had a chance to listen earlier, I think this, one of the more bipartisan things I've come across is this Epstein thing. Not because it's him and not because anybody's involved, because you're going to find out a lot of people involved on both sides. Is it just, I think people are just kind of pissed off that something of this magnitude can go on when our law enforcement seem to be able to go up everybody else's ass, and yet certain people seem to get away with everything. I've talked about it for all the years we've been on the show in terms of antitrust. I've talked about it in front running. We still can't find the people who somehow bought the puts before 9/11. I don't know why. We don't seem to be able to check and see who bought the copper last week before the tariff increase. I mean, people are so aware that our crime, our law enforcement division has all kinds of hands off on all kinds of people, and I think people are tired of it, John. I mean, I've been tired of it for 30 years, but I don't expect people to think like me. I think it's a disgusting thing. And I am dying to find out, and I never will. I mean, if you and I, you know, suppose we stopped arguing long enough to go buy a big mansion together, like one of the biggest mansions in Manhattan, where exactly would we get the scratch for that? Borrowed from Jimmy and Matt, or what? I mean, oh, by the way, then we're done with that. We need one in Palm Beach. And what about Ohio? Yeah, we need one there, too. What about New Mexico? I would never have thought of New Mexico. How does that even happen without anybody finding out about it? When everybody else, if you bring 10,000 in one into a bank, they're making a report on you.
Well, just take the New Mexico Zorro Ranch for one example.
Is that what it was, a ranch down there?
Well, yeah, but it's 10,000 acres, Tom. And, you know, it was purchased from the former governor of New Mexico. Well, that's a story
of
some kind.
You're my land dude. 10,000 acres. How many acres are in a square mile? 900?
640.
So the guy's got how many square miles? Jesus.
Well, you got
15 square miles. That's kind of big.
10,000 by 600.
That's like the whole south side, for God's sake.
Yeah. Well, it's got its own airstrip. It's got its own railroad.
You got to have that. You got to have
little perks. You know.
You got a little rail spur. Now, what do you need a rail? Oh, you get railroad to get the cows back and forth.
I don't know if it goes anywhere, but there's a railroad. It must be like a intramural railroad that just connects the points on the compass.
It's called a spur.
just for kicks, you know. Like
well, like part. Notre Dame had one, remember?
Yeah. Well, that was a functioning railroad. Yeah.
Well, that was actually, you know what the name of it was?
No, I don't.
Was it Notre Dame and Northern or something like that? Notre Dame and Northwestern? It went northwest up to the main line to get coal? I think it was Notre Dame and Northwestern.
The room that I lived in my senior year was at the corner of that railroad spur and Leeper Avenue in South Bend. And I could sit in my room, and I did. And, the train tracks ran like 20 feet away from my window, and every day I would see the same, locomotive and coal car, and the same, engineer, and we waved to each other. It was that close, and they'd haul the car, coal to St. Mary's College.
Notre Dame used to have a coal-fired power plant that did all the heat for the whole place. There were steam tunnels, and actually did. Well, when we were freshmen, probably 2/3 of the electricity, but as time went by, that percentage dropped. And they had a little, was it 8 miles, Jen?
Yeah.
It run from the power plant up to the main line in Niles, and the same guy'd run up there. How many cars did he take, like, every day, like 4 or 5, and come back with them?
Yeah. It's pretty good, at that time it was an economical way to power the campus, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I assume it's no longer coal, or it's shut down or something. But they still got the steam pipes. They probably just converted it to something else.
Yeah, the tracks are no longer used. Cause I was poking around on there a couple of years ago in that neighborhood, and they're now like a 606 trail in Chicago where it's going to be.
Well, those are cool. By the way, did you ever do those things? I've actually have ridden probably 5 or 6 rails to trails on my bike, and they are fascinating.
Oh yeah, there's one up here now. The one through Sauganash and up to Jarvis and Skokie. I've not done that, but I see people all the time on it, at overpasses. It's quite a bit of bike traffic, foot traffic. And it's great to see.
There's one down, like in Frankfurt. It goes all the way from, what's the name of the country club? By the IC tracks, all the way to Joliet. It's 19 miles. That's a ways. It's all paved. It's all nice. I mean, it's real nice. There's some beautiful ones in Ohio. There's a couple in Iowa, a couple in Wisconsin. I mean, they're really awesome. But because they run through the center of all these little towns and stuff. But anyway,
I haven't ever really done a deep dive into the Epstein, franchise or whatever you can call this thing. So what I know is, from a variety of popular sources and a lot of speculation and a lot of trying to connect dots that are pretty far apart sometimes, so it's hard to do. But I think at the heart of it was a fairly ruthless and sophisticated espionage operation of various intelligence agencies, not just this country, not just Mossad, but others who were benefiting from it. And it's a combination of extortion and blackmail and financial power. And, of course, Epstein used his, I would say not very considerable skills as a money manager as part of that extortion racket. So if he could get somebody's money to manage, not because he had any particular skill or connection, but because he had dirt on the person whose money he was after. It's not surprising he could get a huge portfolio.
What do you mean by portfolio? You think he's managing money, not just charging people to show up?
Oh, well, Leslie Wexner, the L Brands, Victoria's Secret, and Bath and Body Works. That guy in 1991. This is when Epstein
you're talking early on.
Yeah, when Epstein was in his 30s, he wasn't even 40 years old. Wexner had already bought the townhouse in Manhattan for Epstein, remodeled it, and then 5 years later, Epstein paid Wexner for it. But this was done without any money invested by Epstein at all. In 1991, Wexner gave a completely unrestricted, as far as I know, power of attorney to Epstein for his entire business. And I don't know.
But, the guy wasn't doing stocks and bonds like me. He's doing all his other stuff, right?
He was managing everything. He could buy and sell property. He could, he was changing the name of the company. He was reforming the other corporations.
Right, so he's not any kind of portfolio manager like me.
The guise of someone who's got massive. It's not just managing money, but he's in effect, taking over the business. And Wexner did this voluntarily, it seems. This power of attorney went on for quite a long time. I don't know when it ended. I think it was after 2000. Yeah, in fact, he just bought this massive property on Martha's Vineyard, supposedly, that the Obama state had. It's the biggest single property in Martha's Vineyard, $37 million.
What I'm saying is it all seems connected with everybody who seems to get in power, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, Tom. I'm kind of amused at the whole, back and forth in the last couple weeks about, who's going to go down over the Epstein stuff. And I would say nobody's going to go down over any of it, because it's like, the nuclear detente, so to speak, during the Cold War. It's mutual assured destruction. For anything that somebody thinks they have on Trump, maybe not Trump himself, but other people know exactly how vulnerable those people are making that threat or accusation, and it's nobody wants to stir that pot. And that's how big and how compromised so many levels of government and intelligence and the military and the markets. I don't know where you can draw a circle around any of this stuff, but it's all going to be kind of locked up pretty tight. And we know from just the externals that we've been let know that, it broke up Bill Gates and Melinda Gates' marriage. It must have been pretty bad to do that, I guess. I don't think there's anything else going on that rose to that level of seriousness. But I think that shows, too, how compromised, so many levels of both parties, and not just in this country, but everywhere else, the royal family, the European countries. Heck, you got Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner, and Anthony Weiner, was a pedophile too. And they're hooked in with the Clintons, and they were all taking flights on the Lolita Express, and they were all, dancing to Epstein's tune, whatever it happened to be that day. There's no way somebody's going to make an accusation against Trump now when they could have done it all during the Biden years, except that they knew that anything that they had against Trump would be worse than something he could come up with against them. So it's mutual assured destruction. Nobody's going to let any of this come out. They're willing to make a fuss about it and make it look like they want to get to the bottom of it. And we'll no more get to the bottom of this than we have with the Kennedy assassination. By the way, Tom, Epstein is still alive as far as I know. He's far too powerful not to have been able to engineer a fake death. So it wouldn't be, I'm sure, of all the people who would be willing or incentivized to fake their death, and you can start with Ken Lay and a bunch of other people, Epstein makes them all look like.
I was just going to ask you, bro, talk about, I won't say great minds, but some minds think alike. I was going to ask you, think Kenny Boy's alive?
Of course. I mean, he may have died in natural causes, but he didn't die when they said he did. So,
what about Hitler?
Well, that's, I go back and forth on that.
Me too.
Interesting evidence.
They claim they had the teeth and everything else, so I don't know.
There's enough pop culture stuff. If you look at movies like Gilda and Hitchcock's film Notorious, you know, about the, you know, the Nazis in Argentina and, you know, Uruguay after World War II. This was a hot topic in the 40s after the war, and I don't think those were based on nothing.
I know somebody who married a, shall we say, a very German-looking lady from somewhere down there, Colombia or some damn place. And it was either Colombia or Argentina. And I'm sitting there going, this doesn't look too... you have to look too far to see how this would got here, right? But, the question, we both have a lot of concerns that are the same. We just have sometimes different views of it. When a country matures like ours, I think that sometimes you got to have one of these come to Jesus moments, and they sort of did when they finally got rid of J. Edgar Hoover. if what you say is true, let's put it this way, I don't think there's any debate, much as I'd love to argue with you, is this seems to be true up till now. I mean, I'm convinced that the same people who are doing this kind of crap are the same people that are that get the heads up on the copper trade, that, you know, all the other kind of stuff. I think that's the question is, as a country, when you have, I'm going to say 85% of the country not doing very well economically compared to other people, and we're talking about a guy, just the enormity of the money that this guy managed to put together, and what is a massive townhouse in Manhattan cost? How many million bucks, for God's sake? And everybody else is sitting there cutting coupons. Not everybody, but a lot of people. How, someplace, somewhere, you would think there'd be enough. And we know how George Bush got in. It was the old line Republicans couldn't stand Clinton and put him in there. Okay, and it was the old guys from the Reagan cabinet and so forth that got him in there. And somehow, but how did Clinton get from, you know, a half-assed, very, very charming, but half-assed governor in Arkansas, and he gets nowhere. And all of a sudden, he's president. With Gary Hart, had an affair with one lady, which would make him look like a child compared to Clinton, and he's out.
And he didn't even have an affair with her. Yeah. It was a posed photo op. It was for the moment. Well, you've heard the rumors about Bill Clinton being Winthrop Rockefeller's son.
Oh, yeah, no, I have not. Well, it's what I managed to miss.
That would explain how a guy from Hope, Arkansas, was, you know, became this mogul. Because, I mean, he had charm to a point, too much charm, I would say. But that would have considerably smoothed.
I don't think he ever had to talk twice to have a lady with him. They wanted to be with him.
Right. Well, that went with the territory. And, you know, I think, you know, Winthrop Rockefeller went to Arkansas, you know, that was the way, you know, the Rockefeller Empire was apportioned out among the various descendants. And that was his bailiwick. And he, you know, supposedly, you know, had an affair with Clinton's mother. I mean, this is rumored. All this stuff is, you know, nobody's going to ask for, you know, a paternity test now. I think they're afraid of what they might find. But, I mean, you can speculate a lot, but this to me would explain pretty clearly how somebody with minor, you know, expertise and skill and background like Clinton rocketed to the top.
Well, Obama, you know, he had the education, but in Trump, how does a guy who could have been one of the most hated people in New York by just about everyone, how does the guy end up being president? I mean, he had a personality that clicked with some people, but other.
I think he, you know, it was a reluctant choice on his part, Tom. But he, you know, he had, you know, undisputed business strength.
Where, you know, and what? Every business he touched fell apart.
Well, but as somebody to be reckoned with in New York real estate, you can't take that away from.
I can't. I agree with you.
But what he, you know, could see, and I saw too, maybe not at the same time or maybe later or earlier, but the total political vacuum, like you and I have just been talking about, where all of these people are on the take and they're all totally compromised, and it's all shadow boxing with each other. And Trump saw that, you know, bleeding the country, and not just this country, but bleeding this country dry, and it kind of forced his hand. to do something about it. And, you know, no political entity on either side.
But they didn't. They didn't ruin him like they did Gary Hart. They didn't. Well, they didn't ruin him like they did the guy who ran against Obama.
They tried desperately.
No, I'm not talking about the once he gets in there, the press he was insulting and begging. I'm talking about the real people that somehow opened up. If they could open up Fitzgerald's divorce file, they could have found the goods on Obama and Epstein 20 years ago, if somebody wanted to.
And they tried to find or to invent, but they didn't find about Trump.
I'm saying
they're still doing it.
You can't, on the one hand, say that they're if you're talking about all these pictures and flights and the Arabs, who else? You know, I'm going to say the Arabs. Everybody sounds like from Saudi Arabia, but a lot of people in the Middle East can't wait to get into the place in Palm Springs. Can't wait to get to Epstein's Island. That's people there would not like the fact that 15 of their princes, who supposedly are holier than thou, were over here messing around with 14-year-olds. I mean, how's
that story ever going to?
But the question is who is behind the scenes with the file cabinet with all the pictures? Who are we talking about? I mean, obviously Trump doesn't want. I don't think he's the one who put it together. I don't think he did that. I don't think he even went to the island down there, to be honest with you. But now all of a sudden he's in a situation where every single day another little peel comes off the onion, and you sit there and go, wait a minute, 4,700 transactions, $1 billion, where's all this money going? Just like the puts before 9/11, people are sitting there going, what the bleep? And now whether they'll all quiet down, probably. But maybe one time they won't. They didn't win Nixon. They didn't stop until he was out. And I don't think, to be honest with you...
I think you're going to see Murdoch settle pretty fast.
I don't think so. I think he's got it. He approved it. Now the question is, where does this...
Well, Les Wexner has a birthday card in there, too. So I think you're going to see this whole thing go away real fast.
Maybe
to me will speak volumes for how nobody wants this to come out. Nobody can bear to have it come out.
I think there's a drumbeat. I think there's a lot of people that are totally pissed off in this country, more so than I've ever seen. You know, because of guys like you, Jan, I talked to the people. I'm getting back on the radio last week. I don't know if I told you this. And, we don't want you. What do you mean we don't want you? You don't want us. We've gone all progressive. And I go, what does that mean exactly? Oh, you're way too far in the middle, and your guys are too far right. We don't even want a comment from the right. And I'm sitting there going, I've been forced to watch Newsmax once in a while, and I see how disgusting that is. I knew that there were people on the left that were sort of the same way. I didn't know there was anybody who was that far that way. Just an education for me. Well, you only want to talk in an echo chamber? Were you only listening to the same stuff day after day? What purpose does that serve? I
hear you, and this shows that there's still tremendous pressure, and where it's coming from, or how it's being applied, maybe isn't for public consumption, but to keep the drumbeat going despite all of the perception, despite all the polling that at least some of the honest polling that seems to be out there, that you've still got to keep the progressive agenda alive and well. And even if it's on life support, you got to make people think it's still happy and healthy, and you should get on board with it too. This whole discussion we've been having about where people's frustration will end up, and at one point does somebody have to cry uncle and give back some of this crookedness? But if you look at what's happened over the weekend with the disclosures about December 2016 after the election, when the Obama White House, closed ranks and decided, despite what their intelligence had shown, that they were going to accuse Trump of having conspired with the Russians to steal the election from the Democrats, because they were so taken aback by the fact that he actually beat Hillary Clinton. Nobody was predicting that. Nobody, except I think Rasmussen at the time, nobody would tolerate it either. So they did everything possible.
I did. I actually thought that I didn't know that he would necessarily win, but I thought she would absolutely underperform.
I thought he'd win after Brexit, succeeded. I just had a feeling that, and I didn't believe any of the pollsters, and I didn't believe that.
Well, the reason why I thought that, John, is, you know, you shouldn't look at the world through your own eyes, although everybody does. I could never vote for her. Ever. And I'm accused of being this Democrat, even though the Democratic station doesn't want me. I could never vote for her. She had trades going on her account that weren't hers. That's a deal breaker for me. Absolutely a deal breaker. Just saying. That's my business.
Me too. And you know, Rahm Emanuel and other people who just made killings without any, you know, particular expertise or money, and all of a sudden they're wealthy beyond measure.
Oh,
but
Rahm was a big investor in Uber. He was his brother was in those rock bands, so was he. He had real investments.
Well, but he had lots of, you know, ethical questions too.
Well, I'm not saying he didn't, but my point is
pushing to get Uber in Chicago because his
you're speaking to the choir. As a former cab driver, you know how I feel about that. But
me too. Well, I'm not a former cab driver, but I feel as strongly as you do about that. What I'm trying to, like, you know, pin down here, though, is that I don't think there's any low-hanging fruit with the Epstein, you know, mess, such that there's going to be a designated scapegoat or a victim that's going to take the fall for it. I mean, Epstein supposedly himself has, you know, died, and you can't go after him now. And I think that's pretty much closed off any possibility of getting anybody now to come clean. Even Ghislaine Maxwell, they gave her, you know, immunity up the wazoo. I don't think she can tell the whole story either.
You recall the Iran-Contra, which was about almost as bad in terms of going against what, you know, we all are about right here. As I recall,
that was treasonous too, like the Gabbard disclosures.
Yeah,
well, I lumped them together completely.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, you know the history better than me, but they appointed essentially a special investigation, for lack of a better term, a special prosecutor, even though he wasn't. And they put Dan Inouye in charge of that, correct?
Yeah.
Now, the question is, and for those that don't remember, Dan Inouye was a guy from Hawaii. He had a huge war record. I don't think anybody had a quarter's worth of graft on Dan Inouye, did they? I mean, he could have been the last senator I know of that was perfectly chaste. And he got in charge. And question is, if you do that today, where's the Dan Inouye? You got to bring him out of the grave or what? Who could you possibly put in that spot that everybody would say he's never been caught doing anything, and he can actually be fair on this? Name me the guy.
That shows the tremendous success of Epstein-like operations.
J. Edgar Hoover too, before him.
Yeah. So I don't think we're ever going to get anywhere with that. Nobody will want to know for sure all that happened, for starters.
I think you're...
Because it would be too revolting for people.
I think, John, there's a 70% chance happening of what you're saying, that it just is a big fart over the summer and somehow... But I also think because of the volume of stuff, and because of, like that article I sent you, there's a lady who actually, when you start to read these articles, little facts pop out at you. I didn't know I read it about the place in Ohio to New Mexico. There was a lady who essentially went to work for Epstein, right? And for a job, but a couple times ended up getting groped, not only by Epstein, but by the lady who's in jail. I didn't know she was a groper on top of it. Was she that big of a sleaze bag too? What's her name? Epstein's girl Friday?
Maxwell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
Well, her
but
father...
The lady, but the lady has... Went to the police in 96. They went to the police in 2006. So these are records that are there. Now, whether she's believed it or not, God knows. But I think there's a 20-30% chance, John, that some of this stuff was actually dropped into law enforcement. And I think there's a chance that this thing every day, another little pimple comes out about... And I'm not a huge fan of O'Reilly. I watched him the other night. He goes, I spent all weekend, and I found out that this group was involved in the financing. If it starts every single day, some piece of paper comes out, somebody somehow finds access to some of the wire transfers, and they come from a Moscow bank or something. It could just accelerate to the point where somebody has to do something. I give that a 20% chance, but it's not. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that it just all dies out.
Well, it may not, and there may be, you know, tantalizing bits of it that, you know, come out and give people something to chew on for a couple of years, and then when they see where it's likely to go, I think it's the same thing with the Kennedy assassination attempt. It's better to wait 60 or 70 years when everybody is dead or dying, and then let stuff comes out in dribbles, and ideally nobody will be around to know or care about what was really going on. It's a lot more likely something like this, you know, stuff with, you know, what the Obama White House was doing to sabotage the Trump presidency in 2016, in which they just confirmed again by doing it with the Hunter Biden laptop in, you know, 2020 to protect the Bidens. I mean, this is a very, you know, easy to see operation.
Yeah, we've degraded.
There's a paper trail for it. I'll be more encouraged about the fallout from Epstein if I see how this is supposed to play out, because you've got some familiar figures here who should go to prison.
I think more people, maybe it's the times, Jen, and again, this is not a prediction, this is just a thought, more people now are concerned with, they don't want to go into a bank and suppose you sold your car for $11,000 and somebody paid you cash. They don't want the Secret Service or whoever it is up your ass because you got 11,000 in cash filling out forms and everything else, and some other guy's got $1 trillion flying back and forth between banks in Russia and he goes scot-free. I think it's reached a level here where maybe it's not because of what they did, but because how much they're up everybody else's ass. It's got people, I've never seen people this pissed off about something like that, because the headlight is on everybody here. I mean, I think that people there's never been as big a gap as this between law enforcement and who gets caught and who doesn't. Than who's the guy that they last week they convicted for terrorism, and was he from Pakistan? Not Pakistan. He was from Palestine somewhere. So they get this dude. God, the guy's been in jail for 7 years, and he's had the feds on him. Where's this guy going to get the $3 million to defend himself, or whatever it costs to defend yourself in a federal trial? We might as well be Russia. That guy had no chance. I mean, I guess I assume he's guilty, but I guess I'll never know, will I? I mean,
well, you can't depend anymore on a justice system that is not being coordinated at some level to achieve a political result, without the facts notwithstanding. So when you look at what's happened with Letitia James and Alvin Bragg and Fannie Wills, and, you know, these automatons taking direction from Merrick Garland, pretty much, that's just the way it looks to me, under the veneer of having only, you know, responsibility to the taxpayers of their various states, and no interference above that, which has become a laughable lie. There's so much cleanup work that would have to be done just within, you know, the federal circuits and the judge selection process by which the judges are assigned cases. I mean, that's stunk to high heavens. Who trusts that the same person keeps getting the same kind of case over and over again and always giving the same result at the end? Nope. I don't, as a lawyer, this turned into an absolute farce. You know, it's something I have to hang my head about. And, you know,
well, the guy calling the shots on the Epstein thing, a guy named Todd Blanche, wasn't he Trump's personal attorney? Now, I would say that you would have a conflict with that.
We don't know exactly how deep that conflict goes, too, or how much intrigue there is, or, you know, how much double dealing or, you know, counter spies are involved in this. It's like the spy who came in from the poll. Who's on whose side here?
You know, it's Janice is, to me, this has been a, and I don't know where the morals change, but, or, you know, I'm just observing that they, in my tiny little world, when I was on the, even though I have a frog in my throat this morning, the I was a committee chair, God, for 15 years at the SIBO, various committees, right? And there was a time when an issue that in front of the committee affected your crowd, the place that you stood all day, your ass got booted in the hallway. You were forced to recuse. And my last couple of years, guys would say, "What are you talking about? I work for X. X made me get on this committee, and I'm here to vote our best interest. I'm not going to Holland." I kicked him out anyway. But then when I ran for my third board thing, I lost to a guy who's now in jail. So anyway, but I'm saying things... There's been a change in tone that's on the 40-year plan, in my opinion. And I don't know where that started. I don't know how it got momentum. But these guys wouldn't know what a conflict of interest was if it slapped them in the head. And, you know, and when you talk about these different administrations doing different stuff and all kind of leading to the same spot, it's all like they got put in there by somebody, they owe people. I don't like to think that there's a shadow government behind all this stuff. But this is another instance that, boy, it's sure not telling me there isn't one, is there?
Yeah, I think if you know, the real crime in this, you know, intelligence operation that Obama and Biden ran, is the crime is against, you know, the voting public. And it isn't, I mean, it was ostensibly against, you know, the political opponent, Trump in 2016 and, you know, 2024. But the crime is against, you know, you and me and anybody else who really takes Bush seriously enough.
But Bush's guys were pure.
Oh, God. No,
well,
but
I mean,
no.
You only mentioned the Democratic side.
No, I'm just saying because that's the most recent, you know, examples I can think of. And it's hot enough now where if somebody doesn't get indicted and somebody isn't convicted, then I've lost faith in anybody ever being indicted.
Well, you know, but you know what you're saying, and again, you're agreeing with me, which you hate doing. I think you're saying that everything's so crooked, who can even prosecute it?
Well, yeah, who can... You know, expect there to be some kind of an honest investigation or production of evidence or a discovery process that isn't tainted or manipulated or a judge that isn't on the take or a jury that hasn't been tampered with or it's a suicide that's faked in some prison cell. I mean, this is the way justice is meted out these days with people at that level, Tom. We can't even be sure they're dead or alive.
So neither one of us, we both agree.
I'm not saying that we should just throw in the towel and have mass suicides because there's no hope for it. But I'm just saying that unless somebody says the public has to be won over and cajoled back into believing in the system that we supposedly live with and want to succeed and are not trying to sabotage actively by what we do, unless somebody takes that charge seriously and indicts people like John Brennan and Clapper and McCabe and Obama
I would,
Jill Biden and everybody else in this crowd that has coasted along.
We're gonna let
smile.
We're gonna let Rumsfeld and Cheney go. Or are they dead? Rumsfeld's dead, right?
Rumsfeld's dead, and I slept better that night. I'll tell you, boy.
So, how about here's just I'm lobbing this one out there. How about there's got to be somebody on the Republican side that is old enough, maybe doesn't care anymore, put him on this committee, put somebody on the Democratic side who hasn't stolen as much as the next guy, and maybe he's old enough and doesn't care, even maybe a Dick Durbin, who I think is pretty honest. I wouldn't say he's a Dan Inouye, but he's maybe better than most, and maybe a Roberts, and have the three of them run an investigation. Something has to happen, John.
Well, it'll be so hard to find somebody who even has, you know, Dick Durbin's ethics, which I don't rate as highly as you do.
I said he was not Dan Inouye, but
right. But I'm saying,
but he's also old enough where he doesn't care. I think
find somebody as good as or better than he is, it's going to be a real struggle.
But I mean, who on the Republican side would you pick?
I don't know of anybody in the Senate or the House, except some firebrand that most people have been told not to listen to, that would ever be able to get to the bottom of anything, any kind of congressional committee. Where, you know, even looking back at the Watergate hearings in 73, which it was the first time really, you know, except for the McCarthy hearings, and those were really different. The stakes were very different in the McCarthy hearings. But in Watergate, people said, my God, the president, this is getting pretty close to the bone here, and you can see how these people are sweating and squirming under, you know, cross-examination by people and having to give testimony, and nobody had ever really saw, you know, how close to the bone some of this stuff could get with huge ramifications. But, you know, that was also, I think, managed to some extent, and, you know, it worked the way I guess it was supposed to, although there's some, you know, very crooked aspects to that the more I dig into it. And that was designed to get a result, you know, somebody wanted somewhere. And yet it would still make it, you know, a pretty high bar for anything today to come as close to it in the public's imagination. I don't think anybody would watch it. C-SPAN would go bankrupt before you get enough viewers for something like that to tune into. So this is how jaded and maybe despondent is the better word.
You know what's even probably worse, Shannon? I think that I'll bet if you actually asked people, I think, you know, a guy like Mike Quigley's fairly straight. Not a huge fan, but I'll bet if we had him on the show and we said, Mike, is there a senator from both sides, of each side of the aisle, that is above reproach? I'll bet he could name somebody, and I'll bet none of us would ever heard from the guy, heard about the guy, or lady. I'll bet there are.
I don't think that person would be willing to stick out his or her neck to get involved in any kind of.
That's another. You better not be married and have a family.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, I'll bet there are some people there, and which ran to my point earlier. How would you like to be Dan Inouye in the Senate right now? walking down the street, people think you're a crook. I mean, how would you like to be, you know, Paul Douglas or Paul Simon? I don't think he ever took a dime from anybody. I don't think Chuck Percy did either. How do you want those guys? But I'll bet there are people there that are not crooks. But nobody knows who the hell they are. I bet there's some really good people in the House.
You have to look pretty hard to find them, Tom.
Well, I'm saying I'll bet they're there. I mean, some of the people that I ran into, this is years ago, I ran into a couple characters from, interesting people from when we used to run the CBOE, this is back when you could walk into Congress, right? We used to run a meet and greet bar with all kinds of horse doovers. And John, you could have met you and everybody who's on the show this morning. Matt Byrne would be good at this. He's a quick little guy. You walk in, you shake hands, you look at somebody's name tag. Who are you guys? CBOE? Oh, yeah, I know about you guys. Meanwhile, you've got drink in one hand and a plate of shrimp in the other. So you immediately wolf down the shrimp, shake a few more hands, drain the drink, get another drink from the bar in the end, and you're out the door maybe 2.5 minutes, 8 shrimp and two cocktails. Those guys are masters at it. You gotta be quick on your feet. I can see you doing that, John.
Well,
because you might actually stop and talk to somebody. That wouldn't be the,
that would be suicide.
That'd be suicide. You don't want to do that. You want to get your two cocktails and your 8 shrimp and off you go. It's hard.
I don't want to be photographed with somebody I haven't already proved to be in the photo with me.
Well, I tell you what, you run into people of all different kinds. And I ran into this guy from Reading, Pennsylvania. And I was a pretty big guy. You were always a little taller. This guy's probably 6'5", big, broad shoulders, red hair. Nice Irish guy. And I got elected. I'm a Democrat. I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania. He goes, this is kind of tough. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, I was the sheriff. He goes, as a policeman, I got nominated sheriff. There was this big crime, and we solved it. So I had some really good people. We used this forensics, and all of a sudden we solved the thing. Like, I don't know, it was a murder or what it was. We solved it real quick. And everything, we had all the evidence, convicted the person, did everything perfectly, which, you know, it's really hard to do it. But all of a sudden this time we did. And all of a sudden the guy retires, this like 5- or 6-term Republican dude. And somebody pushes me to run. I'm the first Democrat that's won, like, ever. He says, thank God that the guy's staff, he was a really nice guy, the guy who didn't lose, he retired. He had 7 ladies working for him. 5 of them, or was it 5, whatever it was, but two-thirds of them decided to stay. He goes, thank God. Otherwise, I wouldn't know where the men's room was. I wouldn't know anything about bills flying back and forth. He goes, but I'm in here. And he goes, but now all of a sudden, because it's not like Chicago, where if you make a vote, nobody gives a crap, really. He said, Reading, everybody cares everything you do. And so I get on the two basic rookie committees. One was Agriculture Committee. And the other one is the Armed Services, not the one that does the, you know, if you go bomb somebody, that group, what they call that, the Secret Operations Group, just the regular funding thing, which you don't really fund all that much. I mean, anyway, so he goes, now this year, it was the year gays in the military. And he goes, I'm a Democrat. I don't mind the don't ask, don't tell. Let's just say the city of Reading does not want that. They don't want any. So I got that one in front of me. And it was the year of the Great Mississippi Flood. So they're handing out money to all these people. And Reading was all over that. He goes, there was a guy in the committee. Evidently, there's a Missouri River in Vermont. I mean, I wouldn't know the geography. Hit me in the head. He goes, the guy who was the Vermont representative wanted money for that river, or else he wouldn't vote for it, unless, even though they didn't have a flood.
That's about right.
He goes, so I said, so what'd you do? He goes, we gave him some dough. We needed the vote. He goes, I didn't do it. I'm the rookie on the committee. And we gave the guy some dough, and I'm sitting there, what the hell do we do that for? But anyway, he's the nicest guy. I mean, so there are people that come from a lot of smaller towns and stuff that are actually real. But not to say anybody from Chicago isn't, but that was a long time ago, Jim. I still think there's some good people in Congress. Just the question is, who the hell are they, and then do they get anywhere?
Yeah, and how do they, like, make a name for themselves or get anything started? I mean, with the current approval rate of the Democrats in Congress, what is it, 19%? The only way that's going to change is if somebody on the Democratic side takes on the Democrats. And I don't see that unless it's somebody like a Mamdani, which is hardly the
alternative. Well, I mean, you ever see the, we got to go to break here, get right on, but you ever see the polls on people's view of Congress and then their view of their guy?
Oh, yeah.
It's like 80% disapproval of Congress, 80% approval of their guy, which is interesting. I won't say it's crazy. I just say it's interesting, right?
Yeah, it shows just how effectively they deflected everything.
Yeah, well, we do that. Not me. SP Futures up 14. NASDAQ Futures up 53. Be right back. Audrey Johnson talks some real estate. Well, a couple more of these buildings downtown hitting the skids, eh, Jen?
Yep.
We'll talk about that, and Audrey's got a bunch of stuff to talk about as well. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low-price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now. 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. I'm Ed Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 14. NASDAQ futures up 52. Dow futures up 98. Let me see if everybody's going crazy here on the Dow. Microsoft's actually down 340. It's been up almost every day. But they had some kind of... Matt, didn't they have some kind of a hack over the weekend?
I'm not sure. Check that out.
Yeah, I think they not sure how serious that was. John, you heard about that, right? But I don't know if it was... how bad it was. Amgen's up 324. Everybody else... Other than J.P. Morgan down 50 cents, everybody else in the Dow is green here. So not a lot, but they're definitely green. In Europe, DAX down 27.1%, FTSE down 5.0, well, I'll call that flat. CAC around down 32, that's the only one who's actually got some movement, down 0.4%. So they're down in Europe on all this tariff uncertainty, but very little down, so not much. I don't think anybody, everybody thinks that somehow it's all going to, there's going to be deals and everybody's going to be in the okay at the end. I don't know, we'll see, I hope so. Nikkei down 82.2%. Hang Seng up 168.7. Shanghai with an actually decent move, up 25.7. They haven't done squat, but now all of a sudden they are up today. Bonds, interest rates are going down here today. We got the 10-year down 6 basis points to 4.37. The Bund down 7, 2.62. Not sure why that is, but that's obviously helping the market a little bit. It's also going to be helping gold, I assume, when we get to gold. Oil down 6 cents, 67.28. Call that flat. We've got gold... up $31 to $33.89. Silver up 43 cents. That's over 1% move in silver. Copper up 2 cents, 5.62. Foreign exchange. Yeah, the dollar has been. We have the sterling actually moving up against the euro. That's what the move is today. Dollar kind of on the low end here at 116.64. The euro did get to 117, so it's not on the low, but it isn't actually strengthening up much. British pound same way, almost 135, 134, 134.8. And we have Bitcoin down 219 at 118.213. Matt, what do you got for us, Travis Weather Sports? Nice day, it looks like.
Oh, beautiful outside right now. Yes, it's currently 7:40 a.m. on July 21st, 2025. Let's go traffic real quick. Inbound on the Kennedy from O'Hare to Janeburn Interchange at 39 minutes, outbound at 38. Inbound on the Eisenhower from Thorndale to JB at 49 minutes, outbound at 43. Weather in Chicago, 70 degrees at O'Hare and 73 at Midway. High of around 82 today. A little bit hazy now, but it's going to get sunnier out in the afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 69. In Phoenix, 86 right now. Some sunshine with a thunderstorm in the afternoon. Temperature said to be 103. Quickly with the MLB, of course, White Sox away against Pirates. They won yesterday 7-2. Cubs, meanwhile, at home with Red Sox, lost 6-1. So I got Chief, back to you.
We have Audrey?
We do indeed, yeah.
Hey, Audrey, how are you?
Good morning, just fine. How are you, gentlemen?
Gentlemen?
Good morning, Audrey.
Who are you calling a gentleman?
Well, we could leave you out if you want.
All right. So I'd be the one left out, not Jen, eh?
That's what I mean.
Well, that's all right, I guess. So what's up with you? What's up in the real estate, remodeling, you name it, world?
It's still busy in my area. We're still looking at multiple offers on some houses, but you know, it's kind of an interesting phenomena. People who are kind of outside the industry always think that July and August are busy because people are running around trying to get in the house, get the kids settled for school, but a lot of times, in recent times, July and August tend to be kind of slow. Summer vacation has become so shortened for many kids. Kids are back in high school before Labor Day. Third week in August, they're back in school a lot of times. Some of the college kids, especially if they're involved in sports, are already gone. And Matter of fact, my neighbor's.
Yeah, I'm saying your neighbor's kid is going to the med school. Yeah. Isn't he already gone?
Yes, he's been gone for 2 weeks. He's such a wonderful, smart kid. She has two smart, wonderful. They've raised two smart, wonderful children who I'm sure will contribute to society. But he is on the accelerated 3-year medical program up at University of Wisconsin at Green Bay, and he had to be there 2 weeks ago already.
Did you know, Jan, at the
school in 3 years?
Jan, did you know that the Wisconsin Green Bay has the accelerated medical school? They're the hot medical school in Wisconsin. I did not know that.
No.
Plus, he gets to go to Packer games, I guess. Audrey has a couple of neighbors of Indian descent. They're both in the medical industry, both nice as can be. And guess what? Both kids are straight A's, nice as can be, and one's going to med school and one's going to something else. But it's scary how buried they are in education and so forth, and nice people on top of it.
I love my neighbor. I've got the best neighbors. I'm so lucky.
Our buddy John Lee, I saw him Friday night, and over a dude who worked with him in Singapore. He's from Indian descent, Southern Indian. The son goes to metallurgical engineer with a minor in aerospace at University of Arizona State. Yeah, what a nice kid. He goes, yeah, I love it. He wants to be.
Well, Indian people truly value education. I mean, that is such a family priority from the time these kids were in kindergarten. You have to excel. I mean, there was no running around and partying. They were very, very, very close family oriented. And they did things together. They were always together. And the family was together. So, but that was it. You must excel. That was at the base of everything. They're happy, well adjusted. They're great kids.
When you talk about,
of course, they're not kids. They're young men now.
Yeah, they're young men now. when you talk about the school cycle and going buying houses being disrupted and other things, is some of that because the people with the school age kids are really not the ones that are your clients now? I mean, they are from time to time because everybody has a whole smorgasbord of clients, but basically, lately, and again, I absolutely try not to get in her business because she's good at it. She doesn't need me in there. A lot of your stuff are cash buyers back and forth. I haven't heard of the last person that you were working with that had school age kids were hustling into school. It's been a while, or am I just didn't hear that phone call?
It's very. That's where I was going before I got on a tangent about my neighbors. People move year round, and what's contributed to that was the very low interest rates, where people are like, I'm moving while I can. Very short inventory that you had to jump when you could. It didn't matter if it was Christmas Eve or the 4th of July. If you found your house, you had to pounce on it and to get it. So it's changed the dynamics, and also the changing face of America. I mean, there's a huge percentage that are single buyers, and women, single women outnumber men by a fair percentage. I think it was 27% year or the year before women buyers. I think men were 18 or 20%. So with the demographic, it's not the husband and wife with the 2.5 kids and the dog and cat. You know, you've got singles, you've got couples, you've got your traditional families, but not everybody is tied to the school calendar, or they live in the district they want. It might be swapping for a bigger home, a smaller home. So it's a very different market. So it tends to be busy. I would say for the last 7-8 years, it's changed where it's pretty much busy year-round. You don't see that demarcation. But the busiest time of the year is January to June. That's it. And then July to August, kind of quiet. Vacation, school, weddings, parties, they had graduations, life stuff, and then after Labor Day, it tends to pick up till around Thanksgiving. But if the market's good and the weather's not horrible with blizzards and 30 below Chicago weather, then it will be busy throughout the year. Not as busy, but
Yeah, we haven't had a year in a while, thank God, that you were snowed out in January. You've been pretty busy in January.
Yeah, last year we had a couple of weeks where there was, you know, very cold and very snowy, and it was like, it was probably December, January, we still had a brace of cold where people are like, I want to stay home, order a pizza, watch Netflix, which people will do later. But it's not like a few years ago we had a horrible spate of winter, and I'm sure everybody will remember it, and it was such a frenzy in the housing market that I remember going out in blizzards because people had to stay in the house that day. And I had one woman, I finally said, no. I'm like, you're going to die on the way here. I'm like, believe me, today the house will be there tomorrow. It was a blizzard. And she just literally insisted on going, and I couldn't see out my front window. I did, one of the few times in my life I told somebody no. I said, no, you're going to be in a ditch. You're going to get in an accident. Same thing's going to happen to me. We're not going today.
What'd you say? How can I sell you the house if you're dead?
Yeah, she was so mad at me. And so I called her next morning. I'm like, okay, the sun's out. They plowed once. Do you want to go? And yeah, we were still the first ones there.
Not that you and Jimmy and John and Matt know anything about drugs. Guess who's happy with the tariffs?
What?
Guess who's happy with the tariffs? Evidently, U.S. has only one native caffeinated plant. I never heard of this. Do you guys know what that is?
Cocoa?
Yapan? It's a holly? Maybe little known outside of indigenous groups, but a tight-knit group of farmers, producers, and wild harvesters are ready and waiting for a resurgence because if the tariffs on coffee and tea get high enough, these guys think they're in. I never heard of this. See, show us.
We'll start picking chicory off the side of the road like they did during the Civil War and World War One. We'll all be grabbing chicory and boiling it.
Horrible stuff. So, what's the status of the? We talked a little bit about Nancy last week, and John, pile in here if you had a question. What's the status of the person who's in the 3% house that just had like triplets or something? He's stuck in a 3% house. He can't move.
Well, why would you? Yeah. Especially if you're happy with a lot of times people would move because they're like, "Oh, honey, let's get another house or let's go live on this side of town." And a lot of that has just come to a grinding halt because you're like, "Yep, 3% looks way better than what's floating around out now." And until we get a significant break in these interest rates, that's going to continue. So the housing shortage is just going to, you know, be exacerbated by these interest rates.
You know, you've been in the business a while, and you've got clientele. You know, how many families have you sold five different places to? What is the status of, other than you and Nance, who have experience on your side, how many less real estate people are there than there were before COVID? I mean, what's the status of the industry?
You know what? I don't know. And here's the thing. When the business, real estate is an interesting business, so a lot of times easy.
Well, you're a provider. You got to get a new one. You come in and out all the time when you're on this, your volume.
You know what? It's the internet. Can you hear me any better?
Yeah, you're fine.
All right. There's the strength of the signals, and I've already talked to AT&T about it many times. So I don't know what to tell you on that. But what are we talking about?
The industry. I mean, Nance says there's all kinds of. There's way less mortgage brokers than there were six years ago.
It ebbs and flows. When times are good, people get into it because they think they're going to make a ton of money really fast. And as soon as it gets hard, and all of a sudden maybe you won't get a check for 30, 60, 90 days, 120 days, especially if you're just starting or maybe longer, people get discouraged and move on where a paycheck comes in 2 weeks. Whether you perform or not, you get paid. So it takes, no matter what business it is, if you live on commission, it takes a special kind of person to say, yeah, I'm going to take a chance on myself and make my living that way. Because very few people remember that the only way real estate agent gets paid is if we make everybody happy. So it is, it's a hard job. And it takes, like any other business, what's the timeline? 3 to 5 years to establish a new business. And as a new real estate agent, you're establishing your own new business. And it takes time, and people don't think about that. The fact that you have to buy everything from you know, your pen and your laptop and your business cards to your signs and your advertising and your gas, and nobody's helping you. I mean, everything's on you. And a lot of people just can't handle the stress of that.
Well, I mean,
so it depends. So it's been good. It slowed down a little bit. And it's the same thing with mortgage brokerage. That's another commission business mostly. So people come and go. I haven't checked the statistics for a while. I'll take a look at that. But it ebbs and flows with how easy it is, or how perceived how easy it is.
Audrey, the impression I have, and I hear it from other people too, the inventory is higher, say, around this time this year than last year at this time. And that's been a good thing. I mean, there's more properties available, and in price ranges people are able to buy. And I see, you know, properties moving even in my own neighborhood. Do you see any? Is inventory pretty steady as far as you see it? And is it an improvement over last year?
You know, I see a little more inventory, but if it's not good inventory, it's going to sit for a while. So again, the super sharp move-in ready houses are still flying off the shelves, and something that needs work, not desirable floor plan, anything like that, is still sitting. So yeah, it's a little better. We're in a longer. I think we're up to 2 months inventory that has been listed, theoretically, instead of like before. At one time, it was down to like a couple of weeks, so that's how they calculate it. So there is more out there, maybe not what you want, I guess is the way to look at it.
Well, we mentioned last time you ran your, don't go into a whole lot of detail, but you're involved in a rehab project, and I'm going to say she's doing a pretty good job. I mean, in fact, a damn good job. What have you learned in terms of prices and people and over budget, under budget? I mean, I'm not asking. I mean, what has surprised you in terms of expenses or able to get stuff and big boxes versus other people? I mean, what have you learned?
I would say this has been. I've never done an extensive rehab as this one is, and it's a very good product in a very good neighborhood. First of all, I've had more fun. Something I've done for other people and not done as big a scale for myself. I've enjoyed it immensely. I'm working with a great crew, a great GC, a wonderful foreman, a really, really hardworking crew. So I feel like I've learned so much in the last few months. I feel like I got like an associate's degree in rehabbing. But what is really interesting, since the last time I've done it, obviously, everything costs more, but I was kind of used to labor being maybe a third of the cost. I will tell you, labor is now 50% of the cost, even if you're getting a pretty good deal. So I would say people used to say, oh, tack on about 10% for overage. I would say you've got to tack on about 25% to what you thought you were going to spend. It's nerve-wracking at times, and I'm a micromanager, which Tom sure could tell you that.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
So I've got my nose at everything, and my wonderful GC knows how to manage me pretty well. But it's been very interesting, pretty stressful. All in all, it's been I've enjoyed it, and I've learned a lot. I think I'd like to do maybe a little more, but the key, as any investor will tell you, is you have to buy it right, keep your expenses down, and just with the price of everything at the stores.
What prices surprise? Wow. Jan, feel free to pipe in. What prices surprise you the most? From what you've told me, and again, I don't put my nose in it, but I used to do some construction. I can't get over the difference in prices for like cabinets and stuff. So when I used to do this, because when I did it, Jan, it was 40 years ago, but still, I mean, it's astounding to me how much they've gone up.
And they're not real wood anymore either, unless you have a fortune to spend.
Jen, what you're saying?
I put a drag on remodeling projects just from my standpoint. I'm going to do a different kind of kitchen remodel than I ever planned to, just because the one that I envision is just out of sight, you know, and I can't justify it over the long haul. So I've got to compromise some way to do something, but I've got to be inventive about it. And it's changed my whole focus on what I really can accomplish by putting any money into it. I have to be pretty careful about it. I don't overspend. So
when I did several kitchens, and there was a place called, and there were a bunch of different companies that made cabinets, and somehow I got in Dutch a little bit with these guys from Bramer. And I would just call them, and I would spec out. Imagine this, guys, on graph paper. I'd put the kitchen down there. I'd say what kind of cabinets we want, and I'd spec them all out. And I'd say, okay, I need one of these, and four drawer here, or, you know, something, a corner one here. And I'd call them up, and they were, depending on the cabinet, they were all wood in the front. They were 80, 90, 100, 120 maybe a cabinet. And I'd order them all up, and I'd get the spacers. I was, you know, I had this down to a quarter inch. And I get a couple of buddies of mine with a pickup truck, and we'd go to their warehouse place, and we'd pick them up. And I'm saying, you know, even a nice kitchen, you might have 20 cabinets. Well, it was 100 a pop. I'd write the guy a check for $2,000, and off I'd go. And I'd put them up myself and get a guy to do the countertop and sort of sink in, and I'm done. And I'd put the floor in, obviously. I did the electric myself. But what now we're talking... What are you talking about? $60,000 for cabinet or something? You could pay $60,000 for cabinet. I'm going, you could pay what? How do they go from $100 a pop being essentially wood to being $900 a pop and they're not even wood? That's a little bit of a reach.
Well, it's not 900 for non-wood, but I mean, I was absolutely shocked. You know, $300, $400, $500, and I was like, what? That was my biggest, cabinets were the biggest shock to me. I was blown away by how much they are. You could shop around and get a lot of deals on things, but what I found very interesting is for the bathroom vanities, which again, I agree with John, the prices are crazy. I ended up buying my bathroom vanities off Amazon, and having them, I bought about one, I think it was 60 inches, very nice, white, good. I'm buying it sight unseen, which is not me, because I have to touch everything and open the drawers. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to try it. So I got the vanity, and John's, let me know what you think of this. With on the legs, more of the modern, with the raised panel front, six drawers, two center cabinets, nice quartz top, all the handles, delivered to my door for $1,300.
Wow.
And I thought that was a great deal, and I was shocked about how nice it was.
That's a great deal.
It came perfectly packaged.
Where'd it come from? You have any idea? Was it made here?
I don't remember it off the top of my head. I believe so. But it was amazing how well made it was. Adjustable hinges, undermount sink. All I have to do is buy the faucet for this one. So So, you know, and way better quality than I just found in the big box store, and probably a minimum of 50% cheaper.
Yeah, I don't think Ed would give an A paper to most of the big box stores.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. You spend your entire life practically hemming and hawing over the stuff, and you conclude there really isn't any difference in the quality despite the price.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it was just like going into the stores, even with a pro account, which that if you qualify for, I don't know how you can survive, at least because at least you get people at the pro desk to help you out with, you know, if you're income ordering massive amount of things.
In case you haven't figured out, Jen, I was very proud of her pro account.
Yeah, well, you just if you're in the profession, like as you're a realtor, you're a builder, you're a you have some type of licensed worker, you can get an account at any of these big box stores, Home Depot, Lowe's, Menards, whatever, and it does help. But everything's flying around and keeping track of stuff, and the point that they deliver, that they don't deliver, that it's in the store, that they don't have it. You spend a lot of time standing around the store chasing stuff.
John, I asked them if they would give a pro account to an attorney, and they said no. Just saying, we don't want no stinking attorneys. Any more questions for Rod, John, or else we'll have time to dash?
Well, do you think our high end prices still boosting the the mean sales price in Chicago? I mean, are they kind of going up rather than, you know, coming down?
No, you know what? I found some that they were flying up until maybe about March, April. And I've noticed in the last maybe 60 days that some, I'm talking over a bill, they're kind of sitting, and I've noticed some price reductions in that price range. Kind of interesting.
Is that because the mortgages are hard to get, or the mortgages are high, or just there's not that many people chasing them?
I mean, it's a big difference in a 3% and a $900,000 mortgage at a, you know, 6.5%
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, but the interesting thing is there's a lot of cash buyers over $1 million, which I guess speaks to the economy.
Well, it certainly speaks to the stock market.
Yeah, yep. But they're, you know, people are selling their $600,000-$700,000 house, taking some money out of the stock market and buying their $1 million house.
Well, that's what John will be doing pretty soon. What do you think, John? Well, thank you, John. Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 8. We're still up. Gold and silver up a bunch. We got the interest rates down a little bit. We're 30-year was over 5. Now it's 4.93, so it's come off quite a bit. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit JetBlue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's EmpowerHR.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit BDLCC.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to DACSResearch.net.
You think you have a constitutional right to conceal a weapon without a carry permit?
I have a right to keep a gun at home. The court says so.
You were on the street.
A man's home is where his heart is. In my case, the penis.
Do you have any idea how many people die from gun violence in this country?
Yeah. Let's make a law. No carrying guns. I'm sure the criminals will obey it.
Show me where in the Constitution it says you can walk the streets armed without a carry permit.
The Constitution says whatever the Supreme Court says it says. As for what the Supreme Court says, that all depends on who's president.
Move the strike.
You don't have to be a legal genius to know that if you've got a president in office who likes guns, and a vice president who likes to hunt lawyers and quail, and a Supreme Court justice who hunts with him, you're going to have a constitutional right to shoot bad guys in the knee.